Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino, and alongside me is my counterpart, Joseph De Leon. Good evening, good sir.
Oh, we're using formal names today? Is that what's Blake short for? Is it short for anything?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to think of something. This is going to be a very interesting show today. We've got our top five head coaches, and I'm disappointed. I thought you and I were going to be arguing today, and we have the same top four. I couldn't. Well, I tried to create an argument for a different top four, but I couldn't come up with one.
Well, you really can't miss on the head coaches right now, though. But I do think that we're going to have a very interesting debate. And I think the debate that we were having off camera is something that I think that every college football fan would want to have with their buddy. Like if you went to the bar and you said, hey, there are five head coaches. Who are your top five? And then y'all just start debating like you're in a barbershop. Is what kind of what we were doing there just a minute ago. But we'll talk about Dan Lanning here tonight. We'll talk about Joe. I talked myself back into Dabo like an idiot. Okay.
You better not.
Okay. Well, I did. I mean, Marcus Freeman isn't on the list, so you can calm down. All right.
I'm just putting my hands up in disbelief. Look, I will throw this in there before you jump back in, though. I think what's really interesting is the two departures of two important coaches in the history of the game and then also recent history of the game is what really changes the debate here. And what I mean by that is Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban, both gone for different reasons, I think has made it less of a debate who some of these other coaches deserving in the top five are, if that makes sense. Because I think that because there's now more openings, we have to include a lot of the same guys for those coaches that slot in after Kirby Smart. There's less of a debate because a lot of guys got shifted up a lot higher than they typically would. And it feels really weird having Ryan Day as high as we do, having Brian Kelly as high as we do. I would argue he's probably, if Saban and Harbaugh were still in college football right now, Ryan Day's probably not on the list and Brian Kelly's probably at four or five.
He would easily be at four because you'd have to count in Kirby, you'd have to count in Harbaugh, and then obviously Saban. So one of those guys will be there, and that's Kirby. I do agree with you on that. But I do think that it shows that of the massive gap, Joe, that we are leaving here when it comes to head coaches. Not the only thing that we'll talk about. Some NIL, the NCAA, I guess, trying to make a mandate, even though 2 weeks ago they said, hey, we're not going to be investigating NIL or doing anything about it. And yet today they come out with something new that they want these three legislations to be put forward. Joe, tell them what it is.
Yeah, so this was at the end of last week. Ross Dellinger at Yahoo Sports reported on it. There is an effort, less of a mandate, more of just an effort to add some more centralized organization with NIL. And there's three major points in this new movement that they're having and they're pushing for. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. It's just a positive step forward. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but I think that this is how we get closer to things being organized. And we at least need people to bring things to the table that are logical and make sense.
Here's the only counteract that I'm going to bring to you. I think that even if I agreed that it was right, which I agree, it makes everything move forward. There's only one thing in what the NCAA is trying to propose that makes sense. Everything else in NIL NIL deals that I've done is already mandated, not only in the schools, Joe, but the states have already mandated. Let me give you an example. There are mandates in NIL, like in the state that I am in, Louisiana, that if you're doing an NIL deal with a player, you have to go through the compliance of the university before that NIL is done. So I think that that already mandates a lot of state legislatures and a lot of state laws. I know Texas, Georgia, Florida, and others, at least in the South. Now, you'd have to check somewhere else, already have that. So my question will be tonight is, what are you actually trying to propose, other than the one thing that we'll discuss, that schools aren't already doing? And if they don't do it, then what? Because if you're not going to make this a rule or make this a mandate, schools are not, I mean, they are not going to follow anything that the NCAA is saying now if it gives them a competitive edge in recruiting. That's all I would say.
Okay.
We'll debate on it.
Okay. Just to add in there before we get to the break, I think that the idea is, and to your point, yes, there are general guidelines and procedures that are being asked to be followed, but I do not think that they are nationally all being followed. Like you just said, like, how are they going to require schools to follow these things? And I think that the idea would be what it would be a requirement. Otherwise it would result in penalties. Now the government the government in some of these ordeals, like the Tennessee one, they were aggressive in shooting down the NCAA, which led to the result that we got. I would argue that the government would be willing to enforce something like this because this provides protections for the student athletes. That's where I will go over the details later when we get to this at the end of the show. But I think, and it feels like this is something that they're trying to do deliberately, that they know the government will get behind. That's how they win. They need more things that the government will say yes to. That's why Charlie Baker was hired.
But every government that does NIL already agreed. So you see my point? Like,
not really.
I don't. Pretty much every mandate that they have is literally in every state law. That once you sign a player, you have to go through their compliance. Right? So, I mean, it's a good mandate, but you know who had it first? Literally everybody else.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that the point of this is to centralize and standardize it all. The problem that makes it this a cluster F is the fact that it's different everywhere. It's not the same. Like, we could find inefficiencies and differences across the country. The point is, I think, to just bring together one singular thing that is standard for every single college football program. That's how you fix the problems.
Sure.
How else? Okay, never mind. I'm not going to ask that question.
Talk about our good friends over at betonline.ag. We come back next and talk about our top five head coaches. Before we do that, or during the break, do us a favor. Hit the like and share to all those groups. Share to all of those social media pages. You're watching us and listening to us. Like, subscribe, notification bell, and wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. Joe, let's talk about our good friends over at betonline.ag. Top five head coaches, Dan Lanning on the chopping block when we return. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way for you to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, events, with the first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews for all the news for each league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, college sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all of your sports information for live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head on over to BetOnline today and use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BELIEVE50, BLEAV50, to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's BetOnline.ag, BetOnline.ag. We're back! By the way, I just received a phone call, so I'm going to bring this up on air. Coach Cal is going to Arkansas. Did you ever think that you would see Coach Cal going to Arkansas last night?
No, but it has to be the perfect ending to all this because, it sucked. Why? I mean, Kentucky fans were so pissed off with the way that things have turned out over the past couple of years. He's not the same. I mean, it's a perfect example of Dabo. It's a perfect parallel to Dabo, where a lot of accomplishments, but the past 4 or 5 years haven't really lived up to the accomplishments. But the only difference here is that the guy had a freaking lifetime contract. He did a lifetime contract, and there was no way to get rid of him. There was no way to get rid of Cal. So, I mean, it's better for both sides. They're going to go after Dan Hurley, or they're going to go after I'm blanking on who were some of the Oates.
Scott
Oates
from Baylor.
Yeah.
Was Bet Online. Speaking of Bet Online, was Bet Online's number one person to take the job. Also, Nate Oates was on that list.
They're going to be able to pull from whoever they want. This is like Alabama having a head coach opening.
Maybe. Well, look, we'll see. Hurley would be the best fit, in my opinion, but I don't know.
And I can say Dan Hurley will not even hesitate to leave. I watched him do it when I was in school. He didn't even mold over. He got up and left.
Completely different situation.
UConn was in the middle of a NCAA investigation.
Still a UConn. They're still a blue blood, brother.
Yeah, but my point is
okay.
He didn't take a second even think. He just got up and left. So I think the same is probably going to happen here.
Anywho, I was saying all that to say, so Arkansas, Tyson Chicken. Listen, if you want to support Arkansas football, just go get Tyson Chicken. That's the only it's fried chicken. Remember that video on TikTok? It's fried chicken. The little kid saying, I love fried chicken.
Yes.
Anyway, have you ever seen John Calipari and Eric Weinberger of Believe in the same place at the same time?
No one gets that reference, but you bring up a great point. You bring up a very great point.
Yeah, that's who was just on the phone, probably because
he called you.
Yeah, that's who was on the phone. That's what
he knows we're live. Why would he be calling you right now?
I don't think that he looks at a clock. I really don't know if that man has ever looked at a clock a day in his life. Yes, he has. I'm just messing. All right. Joe, we've been doing our top five OCs, top five DCs today. We end this with the coaches in our top five head coaches. I want you to go first because I got to start off with one specific person, but read off your top five head coaches in college football.
Number one, Kirby Smart from Georgia. Number two, Brian Kelly from LSU. Number three, Ryan Day from Ohio State. Number four, Kalen DeBoer from Alabama. And then number five, spicy pick, Dan Lanning from Oregon. All right, read your five before we start yelling at each other because we keep messing this part up.
Okay. My top five, Kirby Smart, Brian Kelly, so Ryan Day. We're pretty much all there in the same. Kalen DeBoer at four. And we're going to debate on number five, but I have Steve Sarkisian. I don't love the pick. I can be convinced at number five for multiple other people. Like, if you wanted to debate me at number five, have at it. You're probably going to win the argument. But
so then, wait. In that sense, though, then why did you put Sark there?
Mainly due to the fact that what they have done since he's gotten there to being in the playoff last year, and not only that, but being able to win games without your starting quarterback, regardless of the conference, I put him there. Mainly due to the fact because I didn't, at the time that I sent you the list, I didn't want to have the fight with you about Dabo that we're actually going to have that I think is actually a really good debate on him. But Dan Lanning doesn't have a playoff experience. If you're going to look at what Oregon was under Mario versus what they are right now, they've actually taken a step back. So we'll talk on Dan. So when I looked at Steve Sarkisian, I'm like, well, what coaches have won national titles and actually made the playoff? Well, there they are, Joe. Like, those are the dudes. And so when push came to shove, the playoff and recency, meaning last year, beat out Dabo for me, which we'll have the conversation on Dabo in a moment. That is why I put Sark there, because I just don't know, Joe, if they – I'm worried about Sark, too, because they're coming into the SEC. They have a favorable schedule, but they also have Georgia in there. And when when you're in this conference, you have a very tough track record. So they might not make the playoff. Like, their floor is 9-3 because Quinn Ewers is going to get hurt, and you're going to have to go to Arch. And I don't know if Arch can, is ready for the SEC. So Those are just a lot of things that go in my brain for Sark.
So I'm with you on this where and it's kind of weird that we're even talking about this because he's on yours, but it doesn't sound like you're super sold on him.
Not at all.
I think Steve Sarkisian's season last year has significantly boosted his stock as a head coach. I think he's good enough to be in the top 10. I think he's established himself enough with the way that he has transformed a program that was historically struggling. They were in a deep, deep pit. They were not getting out of the hole that was dug by them by multiple head coaches before him. It was a massive undertaking to turn them into a competitive team. More importantly, to put them in a position to potentially succeed early on in the SEC. They're in really, really good positioning. I'm not saying that they will succeed, but they're in the best possible situation for them to hit the ground running. They're physical up front on both sides of the football. They've got great receivers. They've got a lineage of quarterbacks that should work out that will be strong from Ewers to then Arch Manning. All of those things look great, and we know that from just an offensive mind perspective, he is one of the most brilliant offensive minds in the game of college football. Where I get a little careful, like you're talking about here, there's only one real year of major success.
And it's why I almost put Lane Kiffin over.
I wouldn't put Lane.
And this was the debate we were having off air. How do you weigh what Lane has done in the last 3 years versus you just saying that, look, Sark only had one good year. And well, Lane, go ahead.
Look, so what I was going to say is that I have Sark and Lane right around the same exact spot for one another because the accomplishment and the progression and the development of the program and the positioning of where they are for the future is tremendous. But I can't put a guy in the top five that their lows as head coaches, and they've been head coaches for very long times at multiple schools, is horribly low. They've been fired before for serious lack of control, but just serious, serious program issues, not being in the right position to win or to succeed. So then being fired, I have concerns.
If you're gonna go back 20 years of what they did at other schools, then if you're gonna go that far back,
that's not what I'm saying.
It's exactly what you're saying, that they had their low 20 years ago was being fired.
What I was trying to say with that is if the shit hits the fan and things go horribly wrong, it could go horribly wrong. That's all I'm trying to say. If things don't go well, I'm worried that either one of them can't pick up the pieces and can't put themselves back in a strong position.
Well, you've never seen Dan Lanning, who's – so let's get to this. All right, let's get into the debate here a little bit more. Then what's your argument for Dan Lanning? Because Joe, you have Dan Lanning at number five, and quite honestly, it doesn't really matter the metric that you look at. If it's recency and then projection – Dan does not have the accomplishment, nor does he have a better I'll just say it like this. He's not recruiting like Texas is.
Yes, they are. Transfer portal and in regular recruiting, they've dominated. We have a whole show where we talked about how they were one of they were the biggest winners of National Signing Day. We did a whole segment on it.
Yeah, you can be a winner because you're gaining and adding other dudes. But the reason you had to do that is because all year you were at number 10. Joe, you're talking about multiple five-star dudes along the defense and offensive line. Oregon does not have that.
Yes, they do.
He's
been there for 2 years. He's only been there for 2 years.
Joe, he's going on year three.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So this class that he has right now should be getting into that. What I'm saying is Sarkisian legitimately, from a blue chip ratio, has a higher D-line, O-line recruiting than what Oregon does.
It's not even remotely close. No, that's not true. It's extremely close. In the next two drafts, there's going to be more Oregon offensive linemen that go into the NFL draft.
You cannot look at the draft when those are guys that he inherited.
Okay, Blake. In 2 years, okay, where was Sark? Sark is a year ahead.
Wins.
Okay, so in the first 2 years, there was no down shit year that Dan Lanning had. He hit the ground running, understandably, with an already well-recruited roster by Mario Cristobal, but there was no drop-off, and then there was a progression and an improvement in year two. So my point here is the first two seasons with Sark were really bad and then mediocre, and then they got to where they were. Imagine what Dan Lanning's going to do in year three after two really good seasons where they were contending for the Pac-12 and then were in the Pac-12 championship.
But here, you said that there wasn't a regression. First off, that's a lie because Mario Cristobal won back-to-back Pac-12 championships. Okay, so if you're not winning, there is a regression. If you're not winning your conference and the dude before you was winning the conference the last 2 years, there is a regression.
But Mario didn't win the Pac-12 in his last year. He won in 2019 and wait 1 second. I'm going to look this up.
It was 2019, 2020, and they lost in 21, did they not?
Yeah, they lost in 21 and then he
lost. So they're there.
So that's not a regression. That's the same exact level that they were at.
No, Joe, Dan's never won a conference championship. Ever.
But he's only been there for two seasons. What I'm saying is that the first two seasons for him are much higher than most people on this list. Their first two seasons in their conference.
Okay. But you're moving a goalpost of what they're doing now.
No, I'm not.
And by the way, they're going into the Big Ten. There's multitudes. Joe, can I be real with you? Based off of what Dabo Swinney has done in the past, with all due respect to Dan Lanning, even though I think next year he will pass him, at the current rate, you cannot put him above. Because if all you do is look at some recent pass and pick what you want to look at versus projecting, which, by the way, we can be wrong. They could go in the Big Ten and not drastically drop off to their standard. They have never busted through. When's the last time Oregon busted through and it was consistent? Oh, that was Mario because they continue to win Pac-12 championships. When you're talking about what you've done the last 2 years before Dan Lanning got there to where he is, it is a drop-off. When
But this is what's so insane to me that you're trying to disparage and discredit Dan Lanning for having two amazing first seasons of ever being a head coach,
I didn't say that.
Yes, you are. You're claiming that that's a drop-off, but it's not a drop-off. It's a slight step back. It's a tiny slight step back.
It's not a slight step back. If I told you blind resume, actually, I'm going to pick two different coaches right now besides Dan Lanning and Sark. If I would have told you that there was a coach that won multiple conference championships or at least won one conference championship versus a guy that had won none, what would you say?
Who's the one that's won multiple, Mario?
No. Well, I said it only over at least one. What would you say over a guy that has never won his conference?
But this is so BS because one guy has been at a school for 2 years and has never been a head coach before. The other one was fired from his last job.
Makes your argument even worse.
Because one had
Who has more experience of being a head coach? Mario Cristobal, Steve Sarkisian, Dabo Swinney, or Dan Lanning?
Amount of time to get to where he is right now. It took Dan Lanning 2 years to get to the conference championship of ever being a head coach.
Okay. Sounds cute. How many years was Mario at Oregon before he won a Pac-12 championship game?
How long did it take Kirby Smart to win a national championship?
Can you answer my question? How long?
How many years was Mario at Oregon? Let me.
I have no idea.
I'm pulling it up right now. He was at Oregon. His first season was 2017. He was an interim coach, and then he took over in 2018.
Don't give me that interim shit. So when was the real true first year that he was a head coach?
It was 2018. They went 9-4, which is comparable to what was accomplished.
And then what happened the next year? They did what?
They went 12-2, and they won
and
their
they
conference.
They won the Pac-12.
So Oregon had the same exact record, and Oregon had less competition to win the Pac-12 that year than Oregon did this year. You're making your argument off of one singular accomplishment. He still got there. One
singular accomplishment.
Mario was also a head coach before that and has been around the coaching world for much longer.
How do you weigh experience?
What? How do I weigh experience?
Yeah, how do you weigh experience?
And I think experience is important, but as I said to you pre-show, and to qualify my argument here, I think it's important to include accomplishments, but also focusing on the direction of the program. Oregon is in a position for next season to be a top three team in college football. And I firmly believe that they will be. I think that they're going to finish second in the Big Ten to Ohio State. And that's all on the credit of his recruiting and on-field impact.
Okay, so that was your experience. And then now, again, you're projecting, which we don't know what they'll do yet. The way that I look at a list like this is, what have you done? If I can't, you can project, but you have to weigh that so far low to an extent, Joe, because we have no idea what they do. You remember a guy named Ed Orgeron? Remember they were putting him in the top five? Remember, like, people like you and I were putting these lists out, and we put Ed in there because we got to put him in there.
All right, national title. We weren't doing a show at the time, but continue. Go ahead.
I was.
Okay.
So people were, because it was during COVID and everybody was making lists to pass the time, whatever. My only point is, okay, from a program standpoint, they took a step back in the sense of accomplishments and where they had been. I don't think Dan Lanning is waltzing into the Big Ten, nor do I think that he has the dudes right now to waltz into the playoff with the top dogs and win.
Their roster is unbelievable. This is where, like, I don't think you know how good this Oregon roster is.
No,
This Oregon roster is really good.
Okay. Dan, Joe, he made multiple bad decisions in the first game that he played against Washington. Against Washington, they got pushed around up front. You want to talk to me about their D-line? All I've seen the last 2 years is a good, competent team push them around. So you try to tell me, hold on one second. Please let me land. So now you're telling me that they can compete with a Georgia, even though when they were going against Washington, they were getting pushed around.
I can't believe that you're bringing this up after the whole season we yelled at each other about you saying that Oregon was going to push around Washington, and I said bullshit.
Okay, and what happened? That's why I say projection.
I was right. That's what happened. And God.
One time out of a million.
I think you should listen to me more when I talk about
things. I don't like listening to you. That's why the show is so fun. You know, goddamn well, though, in all honesty, that if somebody gave you a compelling argument to take Dan Lanning out, you got to take him out. There's no way that you can project, because, Joe, they're going into a tougher conference. He can't win the conference he was already in.
I would argue it's the same type of situation. Where there is one top dog that he needs to beat, and then there's a lot of competitive teams.
2 years is going to waltz into a tougher conference and not slip up.
Yeah, I'll put my nuts on the table. I think that that's going to happen. I want to talk about Dabo really quick, though, before we move on to the rest of the list here. You brought up Ed Orgeron, and I think that's actually a really good parallel for this. Just because, I'm not saying a direct parallel. I'm just using it as an anecdote. That just because a guy has won national titles and has gotten there does not mean that in the current year that we're talking about, in the future, like, this is important here. I know that we don't want to like go crazy with the projection here, but we're talking about guys that have positioned their teams to succeed now and in the future. Clemson has taken slow steps backward, and he had the opportunity this offseason to turn it on its head, go in the transfer portal, go after some guys, prove us all wrong. And he chose not to do that. He chose just to rock with the current team that he has. I brought up the Ed Orgeron thing because I think that we are overly influenced at times by the fact that he has won national titles. And I think we did the same thing with Ed O, where we had these rose-colored glasses and we thought, wow, this guy is great. Look at what he did and turned LSU around so quickly. But those that were paying close attention understood that it wasn't sustainable. That there probably was and could eventually be a disastrous end to this. And I think that Dabo, the way that this program has been moving, they are moving as if this is 2015. He was amazing in 2015. I don't think that he is going to continue to be in the conversation in the top five, and he's going to slowly start to move backward and backward.
in multiple times in your debate and argument, you went back to talk about Sarkisian and when he got fired and made a progression. Hold on. You've gone back far, far, far away to give an example about other people. But yet, for whatever reason, you can't go back and look at Dabo's accomplishments. By the way, in the last 10 years. So I understand what you're saying. And don't know if I completely disagree. He's not in my top five. Okay. I don't disagree with what you're saying in reference to the current issues that he's had. However, it is really his worst year, 10 wins? 9-4? Okay. All right. Well, what would have happened if they could have converted in the red zone versus Duke? I don't think that they were as far off as people gave him credit, or made it overblow it. By the way, after that phone call, Joe, I got to be honest. Did they not go undefeated?
Yeah, they might have. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember off the top of my
head. So something did happen to them at the middle of the year where I saw a Dabo team lock in, loaded, and win. Now, I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Even if they went 5-1, okay, in that last six games. I just don't know if I can write off Dabo at this current moment. For whatever reason, I just cannot get over. Joey, it's so hard to win national championships. And we're talking about in the last 10 years, right? Like, yeah. Joe, what if there is a scenario where Trevor Lawrence comes along next year or 2 years and he gets him to commit and come back there?
I don't think that's realistically possible, though, because he is not anywhere. Clemson's not in the NIL conversation or the quarterback development conversation that they once were.
You think Trevor Lawrence went there for free?
I'm not saying that, but I think that it was a much more enticing opportunity. There are way better opportunities to go play.
I don't disagree with that.
Okay.
Where'd the number one quarterback in the country go this year?
Nebraska, but he had a family tie. So we got to hope.
Family tie?
Taj Boyd's little brother maybe will come up out of nowhere.
Well, maybe you never know. Look, man, you can win the debate on me with Dabo. I get it. I'm with you. It's just my crutch. I cannot give up. I'm not that I can't give up on him. I can't give up on the thought that, hey, man, Joe, there's two guys that have four total national titles in the debate that we're having. Dabo has half of them, right? And so I just look at it and say, I don't know. And look, we'll see. And if they fall flat on their face again, definitely we got to have the conversation. I'm just willing to give them a year or two more, but because of what he's done.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I just to wrap this thought. I'm not like coming in here saying that like Dabo's gonna go like under 500 in the next 5 years. No, but to put a guy in the top five, I think that they're good enough, and he is a good enough of a coach for them to go 9-4, 10-3 for the rest of his stretch as a head coach. Like I think that is so easy for him to get to, and there's not a lot of competition depending on if they stay in the ACC or not. I just don't think that that's enough for me to say that this is a top five coach. I think coaching competence and quality to me is someone who acknowledges trends and adapts to them. And that's why Nick Saban is the greatest coach of all time.
Very fair.
It is just such a glaring red flag to me that he's been given so many opportunities to adapt, and his stubbornness has held them back.
I agree. Who are you selling? You know, like and there's a reason that he's not in my top five, but I just can't. I'm not going to completely write him off here either. All right, any other names or any other debates that we want to have here? I mean, we basically have the same top four. Actually, we do have the same top four here.
I mean, we don't even need to talk about Kirby because, like, I mean, that's just a foregone conclusion.
That's a foregone conclusion. I mean, Brian Kelly, Ryan Day, Kalen DeBoer. Look, I will let you go to on Brian Kelly, but there just comes a point, Joe, where, like, he's the winningest coach actively right now in college football as a head coach. And he and I think, was he on year six or year seven of 10 plus win years? I mean, he's just going to win 10 games. No, regardless, Brian Kelly wakes up out of bed every single year, okay, and gets 10 wins. I think, what was it, 9 of the last 10 years, the one bad year that y'all had at Notre Dame? Other than that, it's like 9 of 10 years. I mean, that's – Joe, look, I will get labeled biased because of who I cover and who I'm a fan of. You'll get biased because you're a Notre Dame fan. If you just pull everything off and say, look at his resume versus the other dudes in this list, I mean, it's ridiculous how successful he's been.
That's kind of where I came in. I said this to you earlier. I was deliberately trying to find a way to move him down. Like, I'm being so serious.
Son of a bitch.
I mean, like, so serious. I was trying to find an argument, and I was like, who the hell do I put ahead of him? I can't put Ryan Day, who resume is basically similar, but just like maybe like a hair. They're basically the same. Can't put Kalen DeBoer over him because Kalen DeBoer is a hot coach name right now, but is not as accomplished. And I wasn't going to put Dant Lanning because then I would have given you an aneurysm. Brian Kelly for me.
Oh, heavens. Right.
It's in a major accomplishment that he's been to multiple national titles. He has won two different programs despite being a short period of time at LSU. But I mentioned this earlier. It is so important to me is how is he positioned the current team to succeed? And I mentioned a second ago with why Dabo is not worthy of being in the top five is coaches that are good and that are elite are adaptable. And I pay close attention to what we've talked about before, how they have shifted their recruiting strategy away from being a national recruiting team like he was at Notre Dame and realizing, hey, we don't need to spread ourselves so thin. There are so many guys in this Eastern Texas region and in Louisiana that can load our roster and we're going to win with them. And there's going to be a lot more pride for those guys to stay. That realization is just proof to me of like, he knows how to change and make changes and to adapt in order to succeed. All of the guys on this list know how to adapt, in my opinion. And I think Brian Kelly has a track record of doing that. So I couldn't make this argument that he deserves not to be there. Multiple times in the playoff, multiple times in the national championship. Or no, wait, only once. Wait, am I crazy? It was only one time.
Oh, y'all played in.
No, 2012, and that was it. But we made Notre Dame made multiple.
Yeah, that's right, made multiple playoffs.
Yeah.
And if you remember that 2018 year, everybody's like, oh, look at Notre Dame. They got blown out by Clemson. And all of a sudden, Alabama got absolutely destroyed by Clemson, made that Notre Dame team not look as bad as they were. Ryan Day. Joe, I easily could look – now, listen to me. I'm not saying this right now, but I could easily look at Ryan Day and say if we have this conversation this time next year, he's at 2. Because I am very high on Ohio State, okay, for this year. And I think that they're going to – I think they can get there. They have the talent, and I do think they have the coaching staff. I think they got everything. I think they check so – Ohio State this year checks so many boxes. And you just talked about the ability to adapt. You got to give Ryan Day credit. He went from being the play caller, not the play caller, and giving it over to somebody on staff. And then, Joe, you got to give it to him. He pulled off the move might be of the decade in getting Chip Kelly to go – and be the OC at Ohio State. He's got to win one. And the first time around, and we've made this comparison before, he got out-coached by Nick Saban. Well, Joe, ironically, he's in a lot of the same positions that Kirby Smart was. It's kind of scary, if you look at it, to say, well, damn, Kirby was almost in the same exact spot, going the same exact year Ryan Day was, before he started a back-to-back national championship run. Now, I don't know if Ohio State can do that. But they're definitely got the personnel now to do it. I mean, he's in a 10-11 win factor. What is his record? Like 54-5 or 6? I mean, just absolutely ridiculous how many games he's won. And quite honestly, Joe, if we're being a little bit real, I mean, I think that Ryan Day is doing everything that you think that Dan Lanning is.
Yeah, his 56-8 is his current record.
56-8.
I also find it funny. I think we're way higher on Ryan Day than like most other outlets are. Here's the one thing I will say. I don't get that. So here's the one thing I will say, though. Then this needs to be established here. He has, without a doubt, the most volatile coaching stock out of any of the guys that were.
What do you mean by that?
If Ryan Day reaches the semifinal of the college football playoff, I think is enough to move him up to number two, because you just talked about it. That is a huge step forward. But if they lose to Michigan this year, he might get fired. Like, in all seriousness, like, no jokes, nothing. We've talked about this before. They will call for his head if they lose to Michigan again, because that takes them out of the Big Ten championship game, and that might take them out of the playoff.
No. Joe, if they have one loss, Ohio State is getting into a 2-0-team playoff. Buddy.
Okay, I retract that part. Okay. But my whole bit here is he might not get fired, but he suddenly gets really, really hot on the hot seat. That's what I'm saying, is it's very volatile, where it's crazy to think he's done all these great things. And if he can't accomplish and get the job done with all these great things, then they're going to be really disenfranchised with the results. But it sounds like, and as I mentioned, I'm going to say a million times over, how is he positioned the current program to eventually succeed? The argument of, you know, him doing the right things this offseason is fully there. From a roster building standpoint, a coaching staff building standpoint, he has checked every single box.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know why people are so down on him. I mean, you just basically, sold me on my own thoughts on him. Really, I don't understand the heat necessarily, because, look, man, I mean, he got outcoached by Nick Saban in a national title game during COVID. He had less games, okay, than Alabama did that year. They didn't play, what was it, 5-6 games in that COVID year. Look, he's had some recruiting issues when the portal opened up, and he went to fix defense, okay? Then offense regressed. What's sad is that we look at a guy like Ryan Day, and we'll give so many other people the benefit of the doubt. Lane, Sark, Dan, everybody else. But I do think that it's funny, like, Joe, like, Steve Sarkisian's on that list. And Ryan Day, quite honestly, or at least he's on my list, I think, like, he's light years ahead of Dan Lanning right now. I mean, Dan Lanning too, but I think he might be light years ahead of Sark.
I think the expectations are different at some of these places. The expectations
expectations are different at Ohio State than Texas?
I think the way that they have been, like, horrendously terrible has given him a little bit more grace. And you brought up Lane, and you brought up, you know, some of these other guys that
Dan. I mean, to some extent. Like, so let me give an example of what I mean, not what we're talking about. I've seen lists these last 2 weeks of Dan Lanning being at 4 above Ryan Day.
And that I don't agree.
So that was the debate that I thought that we had sparked there. I'm like, what are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah, some of these lists are terrible. Can we bring up Kalen DeBoer really quick? Because I think
I feel disgusting putting him in there.
I'm surprised you put him there. I thought that we were gonna have a really contentious argument over him, because I mean, you were pretty critical of him when the hiring happened.
I never once said that he's not a good coach, ever. Okay. I have never once come on this show or any platform and said he's a bad coach. What I've said is, and I came out here every week and said, hey, his defense is 107.
Right.
Okay, and you know what happened? For back-to-back years, I got TCU'd 1 year, and I got Washington the next. I've never said he's a bad coach, Joe.
That's fair. You're right. You've just been critical of if he's as good as I think everybody says he is, because there's been a lack of balance overall in his rosters. I do think, for anyone who wants to debate this, I think Kalen DeBoer getting a team to a national title, to a college football playoff, and winning a conference is a massive accomplishment and a recognition of how good of a coach he is. And because of, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, because we don't have Saban and we don't have Jim Harbaugh, the credentials necessary to be in the conversation are much lower than they typically are. It's much, much lower, because instead we would be just figuring out who's 4 and 5 on these lists and who belongs at 4 and 5, and maybe even who just belongs at 5, because it's a foregone conclusion that Brian Kelly's number 3, whatever. Besides the point, DeBoer has earned himself a spot on this list by earning that Alabama job. And I think that there's a lot of room for, if he continues to recruit as well as he is right now, to continue to move up.
Can I be honest with you?
Mm-hmm.
I think next year he's off this list.
See, this is why I don't agree with the way that you put your list together. I don't totally agree with the philosophy. I think you, in all seriousness, you shouldn't put somebody on that you don't think isn't going to be on here or be capable of moving up.
I don't think that that's fair to me, because again, Joe, what if I'm wrong? Then everything that this man has done so far, I'm just,
what's the point of doing a show and doing these lists? Is like, we might be wrong. Right?
No. I said in the prequel of this,
okay,
that I just weigh in a list like this. I literally came out and started this segment saying it's our job to break everything down. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about a list, I think that the requirements can change, at least for me. Now,
okay,
I just think that he's going to have a little bit of a rough time starting in the SEC comparative to what being at that job will look like. Let me give an example. Joe, I think you can easily go 2 years and look exactly like Dan Lanning without some of the recruiting on both lines of scrimmage. And I think he's going to, like I've told you when he got hired, I really think he can consistently get you 10 wins. Fully believe that. The problem that I'll always have with him, okay, is until I start seeing it, yeah, they're recruiting fine at Alabama. You're not recruiting the way that you need to be on the run that they expect to be on, okay? Which is going to buy him time at that place more than any place in the country, okay? He has the more target on his back right now than any coach. I promise you,
yeah.
Joe. You legitimately had go. I'm serious about this, Joe. They legitimately the last 4 years were barking about Saban needing to retire because he went 11-2. So okay. you really think that this man doesn't go 9-3, 10-2 in back-to-back years? I promise you they will show him the door. All right. Okay. Y'all don't know the Alabama the way that I know. I'm young. I'm old enough to remember everything that happened before Saban. Everything. Okay. And how, Joe, they would spend money and fire everybody in their sights.
Okay. That's fair, but I would just slightly counter if he accomplishes what Dan Lanning has accomplished in his first 2 years at Alabama, I would argue that's good enough for him to stick at 4.
Oh no.
Yeah, go you know 10 why, win seasons and go you know into an SEC championship game.
Because if he's losing, even though he has a national title appearance, okay, there's going to be a coach like Dan Lanning for me that would go above him because he would win a national championship if that's what you believe.
He would need to go – DeBoer would need to go sub 9 wins for him to start moving down.
Okay. We'll see. You like the Ohio State-Oregon fight in the comment section?
Yeah, I see. I mean, these guys are going off right now.
They are. All right, let's talk about our good friends over at Home Field Apparel. We'll come back and talk about this NIL proposal from the NCAA. We do that next.
Rufino and Joe Show is brought to you by Home Field Apparel, which is the best, without a doubt, premium collegiate apparel brand that is out there. They have over 150 different colleges that you can choose from, whether you're an Illinois fan or a Rutgers fan. Maybe you're an LSU fan like Blake, or maybe you're an Alabama fan. Whatever it is, even Idaho, they have so many different designs for so many different football programs that I can guarantee you're going to find some great stuff to help root for your favorite team.
I've already gotten my Notre Dame stuff. Blake has his LSU stuff. Make sure you head on over to homefieldapparel.com to check out your team's collection of clothing apparel that they have on the website. And when you do so, when you check out, make sure you use promo code RuffinoJoe to get 15% off your order. That is RuffinoJoe, Ruffino Joe. Head on over to homefieldapparel.com and get your college gear today.
All right. So, Joe, we move on to something that we constantly talk about in the offseason because as much as I want to throw up that we can't talk more about football because we're too far away here and spring is yet to really completely go off. We got to talk about this NIL thing. So Ross Dellinger reported that the NCAA is trying to put a proposal together for schools to not mandate, but guide them in a direction of what teams should do in NIL so that there can be some form of enforcement on NIL. Your thoughts, good sir, on some of the things that the NCAA is doing?
Yeah, just to add in there, there's three main focal points of this proposal. The first one being a voluntary registration process for NIL professional service providers, such as agents and advisors. So this is very similar to how the NFLPA has a database that is publicly accessible for who is an NFLPA certified agent. This is just simply for the sake of some random schmo from down the street, you know, some frat buddy can't just be like, bro, I'll hook you up with some deals and, you know, you give me X amount of money. It's in order to protect the athletes. Number two is a disclosure database of athlete NIL deals of $600 or more. So there's going to be more publicity, more coverage, more transparency on how much every single guy is going to be making. And I would bet that there's probably going to be databases created off of these databases tracking which players are making the most money. And then lastly, standardized NIL contracts as well as a comprehensive education plan. I think that, and we talked about this pre-show, yes, there are steps that have been put in place for certain states, for certain schools, and for the NCAA for what they're asking schools to do. I just think that this is, and we don't have the proposal in front of us, we just simply have that there is an announcement of a seeking of building a proposal and enacting on it, that they want to standardize everything and they want to hold everybody accountable for it having to follow certain procedures. That's how I interpret this. And I think that the more organization that we have, the better.
Okay. I agree again with what you're saying in the sense of the organization. But then when I read stories like this, at the end of the story, I come back and say to myself, what is the reality? Right? So let me give an example. I don't think that anybody in the country right now, especially teams, when they get a call from a booster saying, hey, I don't want them knowing how much, I don't want my wife knowing how much money I give a kid. Okay. I don't want my wife knowing how much money I give in to a collective. So I don't think that any team on planet Earth is going to want this to go through. None. Regardless of what you're saying, right now in the immediate, no school is going to buy this. Now, your argument earlier is, could this be a proposal that Congress or legislatures pass? So then it would be universal and federal. If they went that route, yes. But I've heard them make these proposals many, many times, and Congress has yet to make anything. So when we're talking about the immediate, I don't think, pat on the back, good job, Charlie Baker, for trying to do something. No school is going to buy this. And I don't know if Congress, who, by the way, Joe, again, we have federal legislation saying, okay, that everything that they're going through is getting shot down. And Congress cannot overgo a federal court ruling. So there are things that I look, again, agree, I agree with you. But the realistic nature of this coming to play, it, good luck. It's not going to happen.
I think that the more the more well-prepared preparation that they can bring to the table. This is one of the more prepared, well-thought-out things that they have done. Because originally, in what
called... How did it get passed?
I don't know. I don't have a political understanding of the court system or Congress or any of that stuff. So I'm not going to sit here and try to talk about that.
So that's where I'm going to. Literally everything that you're saying, I agree with.
Okay.
I'm cool with those things happening. I don't disagree with anything that you just deliberately on why you like this. So do I. But I think there's got to come a point where we say, yeah, but what is the reality of this actually being passed? Because I can write, Joe, I could, you know.
I think that this is the most realistic thing that they could bring to the table to get passed, like I said earlier, because this does not restrict the open market for athletes like what was brought up during the Tennessee situation. I think that this is the first step for them to get federal support or state support or whatever it might be. I mean, you bring up how, yeah, like things have been discussed and they haven't gone forward. Well, the courts in Tennessee shut down that case so quickly, extremely quickly.
And that is my exact point.
But this isn't, I think that this is a far more progressive model that is easier to support. And that's the whole idea with something like this. Instead of, my whole point is, instead of going to battle with Tennessee the way that they try to, this to me is a much better plan of, we need to take this small step at a time. We need to come up with things that the government is going to say yes to. And the more things that they keep saying yes to and approving and helping supporting us, the more ways that we can enforce football programs to have to follow these guidelines.
Joe, they're going to shoot it down in Congress.
Instant. You don't know that.
Yeah, I do. You know what? You want to know how?
How?
Because when it comes to legitimately showing what kids are making, it's not the reason the NFL does it is because they have a collective bargaining agreement. Now, somebody could go and do a public records request anywhere right now and do that. You know that, right?
Yeah, yes.
Okay. There's nothing different in that. I get what you're saying. But what are we talking about? Displaying it on Twitter?
No, we're talking about there being an NCAA database that says this person is signed for this amount with this.
I don't think collective. I don't think that can work, because what are you going to enforce on it? Like, so if a kid makes $2 million in an NIL deal, so what do you want? You want to just know it? You want to get the information?
Yeah, I think that is
okay. So what is their business?
Transparency on all this, the lack of transparency is what makes NIL such a clusterfuck. The fact there's no transparency in every aspect.
No, people don't have transparency on the money that you and I are making.
Yeah, because there's no desire to. But also, wait, that's actually technically not completely true. If you and I were hired by a radio station, that's something that would probably be reported on.
Well, I mean, you can go get people's tax returns. You can do a public records request on people's
but
tax.
I'm saying is that nobody gives a shit enough to dig in on us.
Okay. I don't here's where I sit, because I gotta get out of here. And just here's where I sit. Love what you're saying, ain't gonna work.
I think you're too negative about this.
I'm not. Okay.
I think there's a world where it could work.
Me saying I'm being negative versus me looking at the realistic nature that this passes. You legitimately have a federal court in Tennessee that upheld that a school can do anything in NIL, anything, without any
repercussions. But this isn't related to that.
It is related to that, Joe.
No, it's not. Because
you mean to tell me that if Tennessee goes and makes any kind of deal or pushes a deal for any kid,
asking for is for transparency on how much the kid's making, who brokered the deal, and as long as the contract is standard.
Why do we need to know that?
We don't have enough time for this.
We don't need to know it.
Yes, go we do. It is something that should be public.
You're so full of shit.
What do you mean? These public, The problem with like the don't ask, don't tell nature of treating NIL that way is what is going to continue to make it.
The federal court upheld? Capitalism, that you can't do that to anybody else in America. You're not going to be able to do it to college football players. Sorry.
I mean, NFL contracts are public. I don't think that's unlawful.
Elective bargaining agreement. And you know what isn't public? Guess what isn't public?
What?
You ever heard about how much Travis Kelce or any of those goods get paid per their ad, which is name, image, and likeness? No, you do not.
I mean, it's just not as heavily covered. It's that information's reported on.
When have you ever seen Travis Kelce made $5 million from Pfizer? They don't
because no, nobody reports on that, but there is.
No, that's not why. You want to know why it is? Because there are business and clauses where you can't go and get that information without a court order. We'll see y'all on Wednesday. I love you, man. It's just the truth.
I'm abstaining from continuing this conversation.
We'll see y'all on Wednesday. Peace.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.